When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
Me, Ben Hobson.
And me, Jane Maguire.
Today we're talking all about the taper.
Ooh.
The mysterious world of doing a little bit less.
Well, I mean, we all oohed with dramatic sentiment. And I think that that's probably the general consensus when it comes to taper. It's sort of viewed as this sort of mystery world, isn't it?
Yeah, completely. And I think hopefully by the end of this podcast, we'll have dispelled a few myths about the taper. And hopefully people will be feeling better about going into the marathon, because Jane, it's only a couple of weeks away now and you're going to be on the London start line.
I am flying the flag for the Runner's World podcast on the start line of the London Marathon 2021.
Does that mean you are going to record the whole thing?
100%. I think it'd be a lost opportunity not to. I really want to add to the intensity of the day by carrying equipment. I love a challenge.
Yeah, definitely.
So why not?
Imagine being mic'd up for a whole marathon. The things that you probably aren't even aware that you're saying.
I just don't know what would you talk about. For no one would want to listen to me for 4 hours. That's like an audiobook, isn't it?
But really, just literally an unwritten audiobook, just a complete freestyle of just like, God, oh, I better have a gel in a minute.
Oh, I'm just passing Cutty Sark. Oh, it looks the same. Like,
Anyway. Before we get into this.
Good time.
So for the joys of alliteration, this is 10 top tapering tips.
It's good, that, isn't it?
It's really good. But these are all sort of backed up by actual science and professionals like Tom Craggs, contributor and columnist to the magazine, and nutritionists and all that sort of stuff. So it's not just us three
waffling
on about stuff that we kind of semi-understand.
This is
even
real.
Though
this
we will absolutely be doing that.
This is informed science. I think before we start, quick definition of tapering. So this isn't in a dictionary, but this is right, trust me. Tapering is a process of cutting back training so you can absorb the hard work you've done in the peak weeks of training. The goal is to get to the start line feeling energized and ready to perform, but without losing fitness.
Glorious.
That's what we're going for. I'll go with number one. Tailor your taper. So this is, just as there isn't a kind of one size fits all marathon plan, there isn't a generic one size fits all taper that's going to work for everyone. Tom Craggs, who's a columnist at Runner's World, says the key to tapering is knowing yourself and having an understanding of what you are trying to achieve, what type of runner you are, and what your key life stresses are. Think more holistically and don't be confined by the rules. What makes you feel good is important too. So I think that is a good place to start. So there's not like one person's taper that works for them isn't necessarily going to work for you. So I think listening to your body and being adaptive during this kind of confusing and scary period is a good place to start.
Yeah, also by this point you'll understand how like well your body responds to things. So if you sort of are a person like I'm rubbish at doing back-to-back days. Like my body doesn't respond well to that, so I would never, not in the taper either, but in the build-up. So you kind of know that what your body's capable of and what makes it feel better and what it doesn't. What are you guys? Are you guys like a month, 3 weeks, 2 weeks? How do you normally approach it?
I am a 2 week taper because I run off nervous energy. And if I sit still for too long, I convince myself that my limbs are falling off. So I have done longer tapers before and I found that the stress levels go through the roof. And actually, if I can keep moving, 2 weeks is more than enough time for me to kind of chill out enough to be okay on the day. But that's just me. I'm a highly anxious person.
There you go. Nothing like the building up to an incredibly important date to really let you relax.
Yeah, exactly. What about you, Rick?
Yeah, I think I'm similar on all those levels, actually. But yeah, I probably would do more of a 2 week than a 3 week, and I would try to do the longest run a little earlier than a lot of people. So I know a lot of people do the kind of 3 weeks out, that's the longest run. I personally think that's a little bit too close to race day. So I would try and do that maybe 5 or 4 weeks out, just in case something went a bit wrong and you got a niggle. I think it just gives you a bit more of a leeway. But
way to panic the masses, Rick.
Yeah. But I would say that I'm not someone who's ever done big miles, so like I don't think that.
What are you talking long run? Are you talking a 20 rather than a 22? Because I've never done a 22. I don't get it. I think it's too far.
Yeah, I went more extreme. Like the best marathon I did, the furthest I ran was 16 miles.
Okay.
Oh, there we
go. That's like a ray of a hope for anyone that hasn't managed to get the 20 mile in. It doesn't matter.
Well, yeah, I mean, it worked for me.
Blanket statement.
I'd done a kind of 16 mile race at marathon pace. So that kind of gave me a little bit of I was like, okay, cool. I'm going to be okay at least to like 17 or 18 miles. And then I'll just get it finished. I don't think people should listen to me and my approach there, but it didn't work for me. It's quite extreme.
10 more miles is a long way.
Let's move on.
Moving on to point two.
Yeah.
Think of this as your final period of training. This is from Tom Craggs again. And he says, rather than a separate and distinct block, I prefer to think of the taper as the final period of training, a time to focus on performance, readiness and fine tuning. So I'd encourage you to reframe your taper, thinking wider than purely biophysical rules. So biophysical rules. I think in normal terms, he means just this is just the final point, like, you know, you've trained for 16 weeks and you know you'll have kind of heavy weeks and you'll drop back a week and then you'll, you know, this is just the last block of that and it's all part of the training. It's not like your training has just stopped. This is as important in a way as the work you've already done, even though it might not feel like that because your mileage is dropping.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's the biggest psychological sort of hurdle to get over, is that the mileage dropping makes you feel like the confidence you get from a good run in the build up slightly is diminished by the not being able to sort of replicate it in the taper. And I think that's where like that struggle with like, oh, but I want to just do it again because I feel like it will just help me, reassure me. But you know, if it's in the bag and you've done it, now it's time to treat it with that sort of regard of this has to be done as clinically as the rest of everything else.
Yeah. Hold your nerve in a taper.
Okay, point number three. Taper your mental mileage.
Cryptic.
A lesson from Ethiopian runners who are, after all, rather good at this. Stop doing laps when you're not doing laps. Huh? The Amharic word for laps is zur. So while doing zur is a good thing on the track, one should avoid too much zur when not training, and particularly when tapering. In this sense, zur means any activity that compromises your ability to rest between training sessions. For the majority of us, that's, you know, a little zur is unavoidable. I love this. But it's still worth looking at your overall commitments and training to see where more rest and recovery could be built in.
Less zur. I like it. It's a great word, isn't it? Zur.
Zur.
I've been doing so much zur recently.
Oh, my God. I've just got so much zur to do.
I can really appreciate this. And I can blame my career at Runner's World because I remember the last time I did the London Marathon, we were at the expo for an entire week.
Yeah.
And
I had no zur.
I was just, all I thought about was the London Marathon for one whole week. And then when it got to the Sunday, I was like, I can't physically wait for this to be over because I don't want to stop thinking about it. Whereas now, and with Berlin, I feel very like, I think a little bit of distance is good, but that is a very niche, unless you're working at the expo and running, that probably won't apply to you. So I guess it's like, you know, mute the running club WhatsApp group. Don't try not to talk about the marathon continuously for the next couple of weeks. Just try and kind of, I guess, distract yourself and not be thinking about it every second of the day.
Definitely. We talk a little bit about comparison to others in a bit, so that can be on point wherever, but you're right, it's that not this is not the time to start having like deep and insightful chats with other people about their training.
Yeah, and there's always someone, if you're going back into the office and people talk to you, there's always someone that's like, oh, are you going to aim for a negative split, or what do you think your pacing strategy will be? And you just don't need that person. Just swerve them, avoid them, run as fast as you can away from them, because you just don't need any of that in your life right now.
Okay. So limit zer, that's good. Number four is lay off the weight. So if you've been a good conscientious runner, done lots of strength training, you know, the classic stuff like weighted squats and single leg deadlifts and lunges and all that stuff, that's great, but that's in the bag now. So I think it's time to put the weights away. Study found that athletes who strength trained consistently for a number of months and then stopped a month before doing a race still enjoyed all the benefits of improved running economy that strength training can bring. So yeah, I think it's... similar to like not doing any big long runs now, like it's in the bag if you've done weight training, and you definitely don't want to be lifting heavy weights in the week of the marathon and having heavy legs on the day. So put down the dumbbells.
Yeah. Do some body weight stuff, mobility.
Yeah,
all those sessions that were maybe weight based, you know, just remove the weight and do body weight, or like focus on some nice stretching and mobility.
Yeah. Or don't do any, minimize all risks. Put yourself in bubble wrap. Don't do anything.
Yeah.
Just do some very gentle yoga in your living room. Don't even leave the house if you can.
Point number five, keep the intensity and frequency, but drop the volume. So this is, you know, the most crucial bit of the taper is the reduction of mileage. And studies have found a reduction in volume, we didn't know how many miles you run, coupled with a high intensity work the week before competition yielded the best results on race day. So that means maintaining a little interval work or tempos, or you're doing your speed sessions and all that sort of stuff in the taper is great, but you've got to scale back the length of those sessions. So, you know, all the mileage comes down, the intensity can kind of remain, but it's just focus on short, sharp stuff, and doing this will keep you feeling sharp but not depleted on race day.
It's good, that one, isn't it? Because it's not necessarily what you think. I think you might think, right, I'm gonna do no speed work for like a month, you know, because the race is coming up and I'll be knackered. But actually, yeah, just keeping like dipping your toe in that stuff during the taper just keeps you sharp. I think
there's still some work to do in your taper. It's not just, it doesn't, you're not just switching off, and it's
shame,
nice and it's good
shame.
To know that there's some, you know, the speed stuff still there.
The sixth point is visualize. And this is one that I really do swear by. The taper period is a really good time to practice mental visualization, which sounds very hippie. But in other words, you're picturing your desired outcome in your mind. So in the weeks leading up to the race, visualize the outcome you want to experience, whether that's finishing in a particular time. Keep thinking of yourself crossing the line and seeing that time physically kind of above the finish line, or just enjoying the experience. Think about the crowds, think about what you can see, what you can hear, what you'll feel, what you'll smell, what you might taste. Start small by thinking of one little thing and then add more images every time you do this. And you can also use this to kind of think about any things you might be struggling with. So if you want to improve your form, imagine running with a kind of strong upright position, embracing your core, and maintain that form in the final miles of the marathon. You'll still be running like that. And I did this for Berlin, where I had a notebook, and it's probably the only time I've run a marathon and really cared, you know, really, really kind of dedicated the goal to be a time. And I would every morning think about crossing the line in that time, who I would call, what I would feel like, what that would feel like. And I'd write down every day, this will be my best marathon, this will be my strongest marathon. And I felt crazy, but I think it worked.
Yeah, I think it's a really powerful thing. It can feel a little bit like, as you say, a little bit hippie. Like, why should imagining that I'm going to do well in the race like affect the physical outcome of the race? But I did the same thing in a marathon, thought at the time I wanted to get, and pretty much got pretty close to getting it, and I think, yeah, just kind of, you can do a lot of stuff before you get to the start line that's going to have a big, powerful impact. And if you, I think if you decide that you're going to run well and you're ready to do it, that puts you in the best possible position rather than, I don't know, maybe not thinking about that stuff and it all being quite vague.
Yeah, and I think visualize what might, if you don't, because I think if time is your goal, there might be a moment in the marathon where your brain tells you you're not going to reach it, and that's so powerful, and you might just walk and you might just give up on it. Whereas if you visualize that might happen and I'm going to get this time instead and that's still going to be great, it can kind of help motivate you on the day that, you know, this might happen, but this will still be amazing. I'm still going to have run this distance. I'm still going to see my dad cheering me at mile 20. I'm still going to see, do you know what I mean? Try and build like a really positive mindset about, if things don't go to plan A, plan B is still going to be brilliant too. Because I think it's so easy. I've definitely done that before where I've been like, do you know what? I'm not going to get sub four. I'm going to walk. And it, I could have done, I would, that might not have, I might have got very close to it, but because I let my brain tell me it was going to give up, I did give up. So I think it's super powerful.
Yeah, it's really good. I think as well, like, as you, it's acknowledging the hard bits. That's where I think the visualization can really help as well. When you know the course, so say with London, you know there's going to be bits where it's much harder than it is, you know, whatever, Canary Wharf or something. You if you prepare yourself by going, actually, you know what, this could be quiet, there might not be enough, there might not be the same crowds, it's going to be a point of the race where I don't know, maybe in all your long runs you've got to 16 miles and it's been like, that's the bad mile, so you just know it's coming, so you just can kind of be like, oh well, I'm gonna visualize that moment of being like, right, I know this is gonna be bad. If it is bad, then I'm gonna just know that it's gonna be over soon, or I'm gonna deal with it in this way, or, you know, just have that sort of like preparation of kind of visualizing or preparing for the slightly harder bits, because the visualization for all the positives is absolutely like game changing. I think just like that's where that's, you know, seeing the success, but also it just helps buffer those hard moments when you suddenly might have like a real wobble, and then you could suddenly be like, oh yep, ready for this.
I remember so clearly, I was going on the train to my first London Marathon. I was absolutely terrified. And I was so nervous. And this lovely woman sat next to me and she said, oh, this is my, I think she said like 15th or 16th marathon. And I said, oh my God, do you ever not feel like this? And she said, no, you just have a different thing to stress about every year. And I think I've learned that, you know, that first marathon I was terrified about everything, and then the next marathon I was terrified about not reaching a time, and then in Berlin I was terrified about being in pain. Like, you'll always have something that scares you on the start line, and I imagine even the elite runners feel like that too. So just kind of they're earning money, but I think like I use the visualization because I was so scared of being in pain, and I know it's not like, it is a pain that's going to end. It's not a pain. It's just your muscles hurting because you're running. But I got so hung up on being in pain that, I don't know, I feel like that was my biggest worry. And it's silly now, looking like this year, I don't feel like that. So just kind of go with the flow, I think, and accept what you're stressing about. And that's totally valid.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a shared pain, isn't it? And it can feel like, when you're worried about it now, like quite isolating. But actually on the day, there's a real sense of camaraderie, I think, at the marathon. The people you're running with are probably in a similar amount of discomfort as you are in the later stages. So that's something to cling to as well. Number seven, reduce, maintain, increase. So that the taper period isn't just about dialing things back. There are some things you should reduce, of course, some things you should maintain, and some things you should even increase. So on the reduce side of things, reducing stress. So physical stress, reducing the amount of mileage, definitely. But also like mental stress, as we've talked about before. Reducing comparison. So, you know, it's so easy on social media, isn't it, to sort of look at people whose training is seemingly going amazingly or have done way more miles than you. But I think that's not useful at the best of times, and it's particularly unhelpful during the taper period. Reducing risk as well. So that's risky stuff like, you know, heavy weight sessions, maybe some, the kind of more extreme end of your run training might have a risk element, but also like no DIY in the last week. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But don't go up any ladders, that kind of stuff. So just reducing overall risk in your life. maintaining, I think patterns and routines, Jane, you've talked about this, but I think runners are very much kind of creatures of habits, and no radical changes to routines, just dialing back the mileage, not a kind of massive overhaul of stuff. And just thinking about maintaining fitness rather than building fitness. I think it's not the goal of a taper period to get fitter. It's to become kind of more energized and more ready physically and mentally for a big challenge. And then increase confidence. So if you're going to do some sessions, do sessions that make you feel good. I think, Jane, you've talked about doing a marathon pace session. Hopefully 10 miles at marathon pace now feels good. You feel like, actually, I can do this. And try and increase your energy levels by getting to bed a bit earlier. And also increase responsiveness. So that's like being a bit more adaptive. So if your body is tired, actually listen to it and don't run that day. And I think if in doubt, do a little bit less.
There you go. I'm going to shoehorn in like another bit to the increase bit here so that we can still stick to 10 top training tapering tips. So, and this is the increase of sleep. Sleep could be a whole one on itself, but basically sleep is your best friend in the taper and needs to be the thing that you kind of treat with the same regard as mileage and everything else. Like try and really get as much sleep as you can. Because it's when, overnight is when your muscles recover and the body repairs damaged tissues, and it makes you feel better when you've had sleep. You're more buoyant, and just that week before the race, getting some good sleep in, because the night before the race is bound to be a bad night's sleep, and there's just nothing you can do about that, and you shouldn't worry about it. It just will be, unless you're blessed with the comfort of just being able to go to sleep whenever you want, wherever you want. But yeah, so the more sleep you can get in the week beforehand is definitely beneficial to yourself and your mental attitude and your body healing and stuff. Nutritionist Kim Pearson, she recommends a magnesium supplement 1 hour before bedtime, which could help because magnesium acts as a muscle relaxant, and it has a calming and relaxing effect on the brain and can support relaxation and sleep. So we do all the other stuff. Don't, no screen time. Try not to eat a massive meal just before sleep containing loads of sugar. That always tends to make it bad for me when I sleep. Alcohol, don't have that. That can affect sleep. So, and then try some magnesium if you want.
Chuck in some magnesium.
Yeah, yeah.
Why not?
I mean, I say alcohol. Some people like have a little drink and it helps them go to sleep. But I always find it really ruins my sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think,
Well, I just wake up more. I'm a very good sleeper, so I don't, I can famously sleep.
Brag.
When we were doing, remember when we were doing our sleep, we were doing a sleep tracking article on our watches, and I think I could easily sleep for about 10 hours without...
Easy, yeah, yeah.
Just not needing to wake up. So now I have a puppy, that has changed, but even I probably would, alcohol affects my sleep more than the puppy probably, so... I don't know. I think there are rules about this, aren't there? And I wouldn't want to sound like a killjoy, but I'd probably just...
I think it's just a bit sensible.
Chill out on the alcohol from now till Sunday the 3rd of October.
Yeah. I think it's pretty well established that alcohol is quite bad for you. So.
Well, I don't know. Like, if you're getting married this weekend, have a drink on your wedding
abstain.
Day. Like,
yeah,
do you know
of course.
What I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Have
I mean, if you've planned it that badly, though, I'm not going to lie.
Or if you're going to a wedding and you're a bridesmaid, don't ruin our day. Have a drink, but
that's
like,
a lot of zur before a race, organising a wedding.
Oh, that's so much zur. That's so much zur.
Too much. Don't move house. That's completely zur.
That's zurtastic, isn't it? Moving house.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
All right, what are we? Number eight.
Number eight, if in doubt, do a bit less. And this is based on a study from the University of Limburg, which is in the Netherlands, which showed how overtrained endurance athletes really are. And researchers tracked the changes in the cells of the leg muscles of Dutch runners as they built up to a marathon. And they found that after these runners had gradually increased their training mileage to 48 miles a week, with long runs ranging up to 20 miles, the group then went around a marathon, and almost 60% of the runners on the start line had muscle damage. They had depleted glycogen stores, and despite doing a standard taper, their legs weren't in the best state. So I think if in doubt in this bit, if you've got a niggle, just skip some runs. It's absolutely fine. You want to give your body the best chance of recovering. And even like a little thing like a blister that you can't get rid of, miss a few runs and let the skin do its stuff and heal. And I think you'll feel better on race day if you've not got a blister at mile six. So yeah, if in doubt, do a bit less.
Yeah, it should be easy advice to follow, isn't it? But I know that people struggle with that. But I think that's particularly true if it's your first marathon, because I think you've put your body through something like that, kind of 16 weeks or more of training. Like, it's a hell of a thing to ask, particularly if this is something that's you haven't done before. Doing a little bit less is such a better idea than trying to cram some stuff in and potentially, you know, being injured on the start line or knackered on the start line.
Yeah. Hey, well, Rick, that leads us nicely into point number nine. Yes. Go ahead.
No cramming. Right, hey. No cramming. So you will not get fitter during your taper period, and that shouldn't be the goal either. It's really, really, really a bad idea to start cramming in long, tough sessions in your taper period in the hope that you might get some kind of 11th hour fitness out of it. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And also, you're much more likely to be knackered or injured on the start line. So, yeah, just trust in the training that you've done. Even if it's not as much training as you'd hoped, I think that's going to be 95% of people on the start line aren't, they're not going to have had a perfect run up to the marathon.
No.
But you don't solve that by trying to cram in runs at this late stage. So just be proud of what you've managed to do and hold your nerve a little bit and get to start line feeling ready to go. And that's good enough, I think.
Yeah, trust in your training should be one of the visualization things. And it's something my brother screamed in my face at mile 22 of a marathon very aggressively, and it's stuck with me ever since, that trust in what you've done, especially
That's
if
amazing.
You got, honestly, it was aggressive.
I'm going to do that to strangers on the day. I'm just going to be there.
Do it, because
trust in
it's
your training,
I mean,
Sandra.
Just, it is, no, it is like a positive thing. And also, if you've got into this London marathon in October 2019, you've been training for 2 years. You've had enough zur to get you around this marathon times 10. So trust in that. You've mentally been preparing for so long and you deserve to get to the finish line. So just trust that and keep going.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
imagine if someone's listening to this doing the London marathon, like, and they're just like, yes, I've got it. Like, that's what...
All right.
That's what I want someone to be doing.
Imagine, right, anyone, you're now currently, you're at mile 18. Congratulations for listening to the podcast. Thank you for doing that. Keep going.
Trust in your training. Trust in your training.
Trust in your training.
Trust in your training.
Oh, good times.
Point number 10.
Oh, we're there. Oh my God.
We've done it. Food, glorious food. I think this is kind of that one where everyone kind of stresses about how much when you're doing all the mileage and you're running hard all the time, all week, whatever you're doing, and you're going doing your strength training, food becomes such a sort of like, I can just do what I want and I need to eat all of this food because I'm burning it all off. And I think that the taper comes with this sort of like concern that you're suddenly going to keep eating as much as you have been without doing the mileage and sort of turn into a ginormous lump in 2 weeks. And that's simply not the case. You'll be burning less calories, of course, but you should just let your body decide in this case. It really is just not like starving yourself because you're not doing so much, or being really worried that you're going to gain weight, or any of these things. Like, if you gain weight during the taper, it's going to be absolutely minimal, and most likely be water. So, you know, it's all about keeping the body really topped up with good quality carbs, protein, fats, all the macro stuff that you kind of like know about. Just make sure that you just keep eating carbs, especially because, you know, it's not one big bowl of pasta the night before. It's decent carb-based meals for the week leading up to it. Just making sure that the body is absolutely like primed, full of glycogen, and the muscles are feeling good and repaired, and protein does that. And, you know, it's just about not worrying that the food... Don't go and eat like 900 Big Macs or something. That'll obviously make you feel terrible. But, you know, just keep eating is basically it. Just keep enjoying the food. Don't worry about weight gain. Just be smart about it.
If in doubt, eat a bit more.
Yeah, have an extra snack.
Because you've talked to some experts on this, haven't you, about like...
I have. I am someone who has had a lot of problems with food and eating and body image, and I have been reassured multiple times in my life that you absolutely physically cannot balloon in size, or you can't physically change that much in 2 weeks. Even, you know, I've spoken to Renee McGregor, who wrote a brilliant piece on The Runner's World about, you know, times like Christmas where you feel like, oh my God, I've eaten so much for 4 or 5 days, which is, I guess, how you'll probably feel the next couple of weeks. Your body can't put on weight, and your body's really good at kind of telling you, oh, this doesn't make me feel good, this does make me feel good. So you can't, you know, like Ben says, unless you're eating McDonald's and going on a crazy, crazy binge, which you probably wouldn't be doing anyway, you can't, your body will sort yourself, it's out, and your body will know that it needs this right now. So kind of listen and try and kind of eat intuitively and not be scared about what might happen, because it won't, it just won't. So that would be my advice, and I will try and listen to that and lay off the rice cake pizzas this week and not be so afraid of scarves.
You need those delicious rice cake pizzas. That's a perfectly
balanced macro.
If
anyone wants the recipe, email the podcast email address, because I can send it. But
podcast at runnersworld.co.uk.
I'm going to say now, we're not going to get requests for the rice cake pizza recipe.
They are wildly unpopular, Rick. Every time I put them on my Instagram, people say, what the hell are you doing? Are you a four-year-old? But yes, I am. And I love them. One day they'll catch on. And
I think when you're not allowed to eat actual bread, though, you've made the best of a bad situation.
True, yes. And I think that was another tip I read on the Runner's World US site, that some runners bizarrely think eating gluten-free stuff is better for them because it's not got wheat in, which people can feel bloated when they... But I think unless that's like something a doctor's told you to do, that cannot be great. Do you know what I mean? Like, nothing new on race day, nothing new in the run-up to a race. Don't make any kind of rash decisions in your diet at this point. Save that till... Yeah, at the end of October or after the race.
After the marathon, I think, exactly. All bets are off. Go and have something really exotic, you know.
Yeah, go for it.
Oh,
you do, yeah. Man.
Rice,
after that
rice
marathon.
Cake pizzas, like, absolutely. At the buffet.
No. Oh, yeah, go to McDonald's. The only time I ever eat McDonald's is when I've run a marathon, so that's what I'll do.
That's good. We'll certainly replenish that salt. There you go.
Yeah.
Well, Jane, best of luck on the Sunday afterwards.
Thanks, team.
And
I'll let you know how it goes.
We'll be there. Don't you worry. We'll be there shouting.
Trust in the training.
Please don't interview me.
Less sir.
Maybe I'll bring the microphone down and just try and get along. So, you know, when the BBC interview people on Tower Bridge and they're kind of like, hey, how's your race going? It's like, oh my God, it's fine. Please leave me alone. Maybe I'll try and
they're like, who are you running for? And people are just like, ah. So don't do that to me.
100%. Now that's my only aim for this.
The only reason you're coming to watch now is to get a soundbite for the podcast.
Just trust in your training.
Trust in your training. Okay.
Honestly, everyone scream that at people when they see them. They'll be alarmed and they'll probably cry, but they'll run away and think,
Thank you.
It won't go down well in the moment because it's not what you want to hear, but it will go down well when you're getting to that bit near the end where I can never remember what part of London you're running through. You're suddenly, you go from Big Ben to Buckingham Palace and I don't understand how you get there and I never will. So it's like a, you'll know what I mean. Everyone knows what I mean.
You're in the...
Where do you go?
You're in St James's Park, aren't you? In that kind of road from Big Ben.
Yeah, I think so, but I don't understand because you're just suddenly at Buckingham Palace and I'm like, what? How did I get here? But then it goes in from meters to yards,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Yeah, it's yardage at the end.
Fuck? What's a yard? How far is a yard? So don't panic, you'll get there and it'll be fine.
It's like a meter, isn't it? But it's like a meter. Kind of like a meter.
Yeah, so I guess it's actually saying like, I don't know, 200 meters to go, but for some reason we put it in yards. Yeah.
Well, it's because it's
officially a yard-based thing, isn't it? The marathon, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like back to the old how they first ever set the distance. That's why it's like it's X number of miles plus a certain number of yards because, you know, people are weird.
Yeah, and that's...
Yeah, and that can that be another tip for anyone doing London is to not sprint the second you see Buckingham Palace because you've still got...
I got quite a long way.
Turn the corner.
You've still got quite a few yards.
It can't be an official tip because that would ruin our top 10 training taper tips. But
well, it's not a taper tip. It's a race day tip.
Oh, a true race day tip. Right,
don't sprint.
Save those, Jane. That's next week. The racing tips next week.
Oh, well, I might not be here next week, but save that. Cut me out and put that in next week.
Right. I'd say just don't sprint at any moment, to be honest.
Well, sprint across the line. Look great. Look great in front of all your friends. Look great on TV. Yeah. Oh my God, you want to be sprinting across the line, but don't sprint when you first see the palace because you've still got a bit to go.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Cool. Well, that brings us to the end of this week's Runners World podcast. A huge thanks to our special guests, Ben, Jane, and me, and to you for listening. And if you're going to be running the London Marathon or another marathon next couple of weeks, I hope it's been interesting listening.
Yeah, all the best if you are running a marathon. And once you've finished your marathon and you've taken a small breather and some time to reflect, you should probably subscribe to Runners World magazine to make sure that your next race is even better. Visit hearstmagazines.co.uk and get 3 issues for just £5, or subscribe for the year, because if you're building up to another race, you're going to need all that knowledge that we have for that whole length of time to get super quick and great and fantastic at running.
And whether you've listened to this podcast on race day and we've helped you across the line, or whether we've made you really scared during your taper, please do click subscribe. And we'll be back next week with more great tips.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.